Well, happy Father's Day. I hope that you have had an opportunity to say that to your father, or that you will have an opportunity to say that to your father. Some of you, I recognize, won't. It's a little bit neither here nor there, because while that's what we would like, it's not always what we can have. We're going to take a look at somebody today, and as sort of a side note to the sermon, we're going to see some things that we should not do as fathers, or parents, or as people in general. We're going to start something new. We've finished Jonah, and we're going to jump into spending some time this summer looking at this idea of shining like a light in the world, as we started the year talking about. Maybe, perhaps, the first person who comes to your mind other than Jesus is the man Joseph. Now, Joseph being the Joseph of Genesis, not Joseph of Matthew chapters 1 and 2. The Joseph who was, well, you know the story. He was wrongly hated by his brothers, sold into slavery, wrongly accused by Potiphar's wife of having done something wrong, wrongly imprisoned, and then, like every great American movie, he rises from the ashes to become the second most powerful man in all of Egypt, having then the opportunity to exact revenge on his brothers for what they had done to him, and instead chooses to forgive. And then it ends with that little phrase, "You intended it for evil, but God intended it for good." We're going to start in Genesis chapter 37. That comes in Genesis chapter 50, but it begs a certain level of questioning. Do we actually know and understand the story of Joseph the way we should? Do we actually know and understand the story of Joseph the way it was actually written? Or have we concocted some sort of nice, fun, simple, wrong version of the story of Joseph? Beginning with the question, do we understand that God orchestrated everything that went on in Joseph's life in order to put Joseph where he wanted him? And some of you are already looking at me like you don't agree. Well, let's take a look at two very simple, quick places. Genesis chapter 47 and Genesis chapter 50. We're going to start at the end of the story. Don't do this in most books that you read, but since we already know this story, we're going to start at the end. Genesis chapter 47. Actually, we're just going to look at Genesis chapter 50 for the sake of time and ease. We're going to look at Genesis chapter 50. Genesis, it's not 47, which is why we're not going there. It might be 45, but I had it written down and I didn't write it here. So now I'm scrambling, but it's okay. Genesis chapter 50, we'll pull it all together for us as well. But Genesis 45, I believe it is, 7 and 8, he says that God sent him to Egypt. Not his brothers, but God sent him to Egypt. Now we come to Genesis chapter 50, which is a much misused exegetically passage. Genesis chapter 50, verse 20. "As for you," Joseph speaking to his brothers. Now realize that when this goes on, Jacob has just died. And now the brothers are worried that now that daddy's gone, the real anger of Joseph is going to come out, and he's going to, as the powerful one, daddy can no longer be unhappy with him. He's going to hit them with everything he's got. And so they go to him and say, "Please be kind to us." And Joseph's response to them reiterates that God was the one orchestrating these events. And he says, "As for you," you my brothers, "as for you, you meant or intended evil against me." We get that. We get that because we look at the story and what all went on and we say, oh, they were trying to hurt him. That's what it means that you intend something. That's what it means that you mean something. You try to make it have the result you want. You put things in motion so as to do what you want. And here they want to hurt him. But God, in the same sentence or the same verse, using the same Hebrew word, God meant it for good. Inasmuch as you, the brothers, intended, planned, schemed to harm me, God intended, planned, schemed to save you through what happened to me. God has at least as much orchestrating of events going on here as the brothers do. At least as much. So now, as we step back to the beginning of the story, let's look at the story of Joseph through the lens of God orchestrating events, not through the lens of God using something bad and making it good, because that's usually how we talk about this story. But that's not what it says. What it says is that God sent him to Egypt, the mode of which was slavery after his brothers wanted to kill him. God intended these things for good to save many people, including Israel and his family. And so now we go back to Genesis chapter 37. Genesis chapter 37 is where the story of Joseph starts. And inasmuch as some of us don't always remember that God was orchestrating these events, not just sort of using what was available, we missed some of what goes on in this first chapter. I missed what went on in this first chapter of Joseph's story. In my head, the story doesn't play out like the words in the Bible indicate that it plays out. Likely, you've had the same thoughts that I did, and we're gonna just overview the story of this chapter, and then we'll read it. But the overview of the story is that Joseph is sort of going through life, and his dad gives him this really cool coat that would seem kind of ridiculous to us, but it's really kind of cool to him. Tie-dye, colorful, expensive. And then we say, oh, but because his dad gave him this nice thing, then his brothers hated him. And then God gave him these dreams, and sort of this humble Joseph goes, and he's forced to tell his brothers about these dreams, and then they hate him even more because God is going to make him the high, great one instead of the brothers. That's the overview of the story that I always held in my mind. That's the overview of the story that I was always taught had happened. But let's read it and see if it actually plays out that way. Jacob lived in the land of his father's sojournings in the land of Canaan. Okay, before we move on, Jacob's name is going to be Israel. So it sort of goes back and forth. So you're going to hear it talk about Israel. There's no country, no governing officials of Israel yet. Israel is here, the man, okay? He also is now living in the area of his father's sojournings, which is not at all like we talk. But effectively, imagine that your parents smuggled themselves into America and you decided to stay. That's effectively what these sojournings are, a traveling without any official capacity in a land that's not your home. And Jacob stayed in this land that was not his home, where his father had been wandering for years. This is before, though, all of the Exodus and the judges and the kings and all of that that we think of when we think of Canaan and Israel and the promised land, right? They were there in the promised land. And then they're going to get whisked away. They're going to spend their time in Egypt, and then the rest of the story will happen as we know it. So Jacob lived in the land of his father's sojournings, in the land of Canaan. These are the generations of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, that's a weird transition. Because if I'm going to most of the time read that these are the generations of Jacob's ancestors, then it's going to say Jacob begat Joseph, who begat, and it just goes on and on and on. But it doesn't happen here. Why? Because it happens at the end of the story. So it sort of bookends this whole 37 to 50 as one story, ultimately about the sons of Jacob, not about Joseph. Joseph being the main character in this. But these next 14 chapters are about the sons of Jacob. Why? Because this was the man that God had promised an inheritance to. And so if God's going to promise an inheritance to Jacob, they had better tell us how it went. The Bible had better make sure that we understand and see God's provision for these people so that as they go through life and then as we go through life following, we see what God has done. So this is the generations of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was pasturing the flock with his brothers. He was a boy with the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah, his father's wives. Now, Joseph brought a bad report of them to his father. Now, Israel loved Joseph more than any of the other sons because he was a son of his old age, and he made him a robe of many colors. But when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him and could not speak peacefully to him. Now Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him even more. He said to them, "Here is the dream that I have dreamed. Behold, we were binding sheaves in the field, and behold, my sheaf arose and stood upright. And behold, your sheaves gathered around it and bowed down to my sheaf." His brothers said to him, "Are you indeed going to reign over us? Or are you indeed to rule over us?" So they hated him even more for his dreams and for his words. I had never caught that phrase. Never. In the times that I have read this, have I caught this phrase that they hated him for his dream and for his words. And when I began to realize that there was more to this story than I had been led to believe or I had caused myself to believe, all of a sudden, this whole chapter of what they do to him begins to make more sense, and Joseph becomes not the hero in this moment. Now, he will still become the hero. He will still be who he's intended to be, but here, he is not good. What he does here is live in arrogance, beginning to end. Then he dreamed another dream in verse 9, and he told it to his brothers, which just doesn't seem like a good idea. If you've already done it once, and they hate you more than they ever hated you before, then having another dream and seeking them out to tell them that you had another dream, that you're going to rule over them, just doesn't seem like good communication skills. But moving on, then he dreamed another dream and told it to his brothers and said, "Behold, I've had dreamed another dream. Behold, the sun and the moon and 11 stars were bowing down to me." But when he told it to his father and to his brothers, his father rebuked him and said, "What is this dream that you have dreamed? Shall I and your mother and your brothers indeed come to bow ourselves to the ground before you?" And his brothers were jealous of him. But his father kept the saying in mind. Now, they will all bow down to him, unknowingly and knowingly. So make no mistake, these dreams that God gave to Joseph will come true regardless of Joseph's bad interaction with them in this moment. He can't undo what God is working. That's got to be kept very, very firm. But he does not deal well with life in this moment. What he's given is the benefits that God only can give through Jacob to Joseph, from God to Joseph. He either has them or he will get them down the line, and he is going to walk out to his brothers who he knows already don't like him, and he's going to flaunt it to them. That's the only reason you go and tell your brothers that they're going to bow down to you. I had a dream and you all are going to worship me. Why does somebody need to tell somebody else that? We see people do it, though. And by we see people do it, I mean I see me do it. I've certainly seen me do it at times. I'm sure you've seen you do it at times. I know you've seen kids do it, and it makes no sense. You know one of them got something a little bit nicer than the other one. That just happens. It's life. Or one got in trouble and lost what they both were going to get. So then the one who still got the fruit snacks or whatever it was make sure that they go over by the other one who doesn't have them and eat them slowly in front of them. These are so yummy. And that's what we do. That's what goes on. But that's what Joseph did. He's already liked more by his father than everyone else. He's already been given the equivalent of a new car, we'll say. And then he goes to his brothers and he says, not only do I have a new car, you all are going to work for me. You're going to bow down to me. I am going to be the ruler. The only reason you say that, the only reason is that you flaunt it to those people. See, in my mind, Joseph sort of humbly, meekly went to them and was forced to tell them his dream. But nothing here indicates that that happened. Because they hated him for his words to them. Not just for the dream. They're not going to like the dream. But there was no reason that he had to share that with them. Why did they hate him, though? They hated him because the 17-year-old pipsqueak went home and told Dad that they were doing something wrong in the field with the sheep. Maybe they were throwing rocks at the sheep. I don't know. It doesn't say. Maybe they weren't doing anything wrong. I don't know. It doesn't say. It just says that he brought a bad report to the father. And if the father already likes Joseph more than everybody else, if Joseph tells him something's going on that's not, he's going to believe Joseph. And he does. And he holds this bad report, so he gives a reward to Joseph for having blown the whistle, we'll say. And they hate him. The other thing that makes me wonder a little bit about this, to wonder why Joseph did what he did, is we already read in verse 4, but when his brothers saw that their father loved him, Joseph, more than all of his brothers, they hated him, right? And could not speak peacefully to him. They're living in the same house. And when somebody can't ever speak nice to somebody else in the house, you can't help but notice. If everyone here talked meanly to me all the time, even I would pick up on it. Eventually, right? But Joseph, being Joseph, says, instead of, why don't you like me? He says, y'all are going to worship me and bow down to me. Isn't that great? Because you're going to like that I'm telling you this. See, God is giving him something, and his father has given him something that nobody else is going to get. And then he takes this benefit that he's been given, and he acts arrogantly with it. He interacts with others arrogantly with it. You've been given talents that I've not been given. You've been given abilities that I will never have. You've been given talents and abilities that nobody else in this room possesses. You will have been given possessions at some point that nobody else will have. God will give you things, benefits. Benefits both of following him, benefits of the grace that he gives to all people. And then you have to decide how it is that you're going to interact with those things in regard to other people. Are you going to flaunt it to them? Or are you going to humbly recognize that God has given you something that you don't deserve? Joseph didn't deserve for God to give him this. He proves it here. But God gave it nonetheless. Lest we think that Joseph learns from his mistakes, God gives him a second dream. This dream, better than the first dream. Now, he's standing there. It's not his sheaf of wheat. He's standing there, and the sun and the moon and 11 stars bow down to Joseph. I'm not exactly sure how stars and moons bow, but apparently they can. And they bow down to Joseph. Well, this can only mean one thing. He's got 11 brothers. The sun and the moon must be his parents. So Joseph, being Joseph, goes right out to find his brothers. Did he not learn anything? They already hated him, and now they double hate him after the first dream. So he has a second dream. And again, it doesn't do the brothers any good to know the dream, but he goes out to tell the brothers the dream anyway. Hey, guess what? Now you're definitely going to bow down to me. But not only you. Isn't this great? Mom and dad too. And then he goes and tells his dad. That's a little bit like going to your boss and saying, next week I'm going to try to take your job. It doesn't go well. Unless they're retiring. But Joseph wasn't, or Jacob wasn't retiring. In this patriarchal system, Jacob was the head and had that role until he died. Okay? For Joseph to come to him and say, you are going to bow down to me, he speaks nothing, nothing beneficial. So not only is he interacting arrogantly with all of these things, not only do we happen to too frequently interact arrogantly, but we also talk to each other in ways that are not beneficial. The truth of the dreams is not in question. We know, because we know the story, that the dreams are 100% accurate. Even so accurate as to look at it in the sense of it happening more than once. Once when his dad isn't there, once when his dad is there. It's going to go on in the most specific way possible. But what's the benefit of telling your brothers these things? For you and for me, what is the benefit that we gain by telling this person over here what it is we'd really like to tell them? If there's no benefit, don't do it. Ever. That's not a, here's a good thing to live by. No, this is a requirement of the scriptures. If it's not beneficial to somebody, if it's not constructive, then keep your mouth shut. But too frequently we open our mouths. We're slow to listen and quick to speak instead of being quick to listen and slow to speak. And then we say things to people that have no benefit. There's nothing good going to happen from them. Nothing positive going to come out of the interaction you're about to have. And sometimes we know it and we still say it. And sometimes we just don't even think about it. We have something we want to say. We're Americans. We're strong-willed. So we say it. And that's what Joseph did. He told his brothers, you're going to bow down to me. You're going to worship me. He told his dad, I'm going to take your role at the top. And it was all wrong. Joseph is one of these figures throughout Scripture who is the light shining in the dark. He is the moral, good, upright, strong man who's going to be sent to prison for something he didn't do. Not just something he didn't do, but something he made sure he did righteously instead of even being caught in a possible unrighteous situation. And he's going to be punished for it. And he's not going to complain about it. He's going to be able to forgive his brothers. He's going to become the man that we think he is at the beginning, but at 17 years old, it doesn't look like he's there. It looks like he's arrogant. It looks like he only sees his benefit out of things and he doesn't care about the benefit for other people. And we're called to be different than that. We are called to not be people who recognize we've gotten something good from God, something we don't deserve, and then flaunt it to those who don't have it. Specifically, you and I have been offered the gift of the gospel, which we couldn't possibly ever hope to dream to deserve. And once we've been offered that, and those of us who have received it, we've trusted it, we should humbly, because we didn't deserve to get it in the first place, Take it to the people around us. Go to them, share that truth with them. And that has to be our focus as believers. Otherwise, sort of like what happens here with Joseph, it gets really easy to get distracted by the other things. And we find ourselves having our attention pulled over here to this thing that's going on, or this thing that we have, or this thing that we want, instead of being focused on the cross of Jesus saving people from their sins. Or we get focused over here on this thing that we don't have and we'd really like to. The thing that we don't have that somebody else has, and why don't we have it? Because they have it. And we lose our focus from the gospel of Jesus. We get distracted by sports. We get distracted by money, by budgets, by politics, by work, by bills. We get distracted by everything we could possibly think of. We get distracted because we stay up too late and can't stay awake. I don't mean awake in this moment. I mean awake in life. We're so tired, we don't know what's going on. We get distracted because we get so busy in life that we can't pay attention to the people around us. We get distracted by everything. And that must stop. It's got to stop. The only thing we're supposed to have our focus on is following the gospel of Jesus. And in following the gospel of Jesus, not only will we share that truth with people who don't believe it, but we will harbor it deep in who we are, and it will change us. Not it might change us. Not we might speak nicely to the people around us. Not we might follow Jesus the way we ought, but we will. It is more powerful than you, and it is more powerful than me, and we can't hold it down. We can fight it. Don't mishear me. We can fight it, and we can slow it, and we can do everything against it we can possibly come up with, but it is more powerful than us. And at some point, it will right your ship. If at no other time than when you enter the kingdom of heaven and God removes the sin from your life. But in the here and now, we are to be focused on the gospel and the gospel only. Nothing else. Why? Because nothing else is as important. So God's going to give you something at some point. God's given me things throughout life, things that I didn't know were coming, in a good sense, but that were given to me. It's been fantastic. I'll get more. So will you. God will provide for you when you think there's nobody going to be able to give you what you need. God will provide for you when you don't even know that you need something. God will protect you while you drive on the road, even though you have no business being protected. God will do things for you you don't know are going to happen. And we sometimes get caught up in that, and that becomes the center point, and we get distracted. We get distracted by this good thing that God has given to us, and we miss the focus that we are supposed to have. The focus that Adam talked about in that video. The focus of recognizing that loving Jesus and seeing him as the pinnacle of everything is all that we are to do. And then when we focus on him as that, following him, being like him, trusting him should come more naturally because it's what we want. God will become our clear focus of worship. Because if we interact arrogantly with the things that he's given, the focus is on us. As soon as Joseph went out saying, I want to tell my brothers what I'm going to get, the focus was on Joseph, not on what God was doing. And the focus gets shifted from where it ought to be to where it ought never to be. That's the call for us. to keep our lives focused on where the glory, the honor, the respect, the praise, the worship ought to be. But instead, we say, oh, God is really great, but I'm just going to focus on me right now. Focusing on me right now will cause me to think badly about myself. Why? Because I'm messed up. And when I actually focus on me, I'm going to realize that I'm messed up, but I'm perfect in Him. It's going to cause me to be arrogant with the people around me. It's going to cause me to be everything that I don't want to be because I've taken the focus off of where it's supposed to be, has always supposed to have been, and I've put it on me. And I'm not something someone should ever shine the spotlight on. And neither are you. Let's interact well with what God gives us. Let's not be arrogant about the things that He gives to us to use for His glory. And let's interact well with people, not telling them what's of no value to them hearing, while all the time recognizing God is at work in the midst of Joseph's arrogance to put him where He wants him to be. God didn't say, oh, blast, I got to figure out what we're going to do now. God knew all along what He was doing and where He was bringing Joseph. And He's bringing you somewhere. The road is not easy and the road is not fun. But He's bringing you somewhere worth going. Let's pray. God, thank You for Your incredible love for us. The grace that You've given that we don't deserve. The honor that You've bestowed on us that we don't deserve at all. I pray, Father, that You allow us to not be arrogant about those things, but to interact well with them, to interact right with them. And I pray, Father, that You work in my heart. You work in the hearts of us here. You work in the hearts of our friends and our family to accomplish what it is that You'd have in us. Allow us, Father, the strength to rely on You, to not fight You. And may Your Son receive glory and honor in our lives. Amen.
Would you please stand as we worship?